Welcome back to the Jazz Podcast. Today's episode is one that I've been looking forward to since really the inception of this podcast. Our guest today is the one and only Mr. Bill Lee. Bill and I worked together at the Jazz for a number of years. I'm really excited to talk to Bill. We're going to get into lots of things. I'm here in Bill's basement. I got a nice Topo Chico mineral water. Bill, how's it going?
Great. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm used to listening to you lately at 2.0 speed. So I listen to all podcasts on higher speed, and it's always interesting to get back to 1.0 speed in real life.
We had so many memories and just days working together. And obviously so many of them were just random work days. And when you're in it, it's just work and it is what it is. But when you think back, I probably spent more time with you in a 5 or 6 year period than I did with anyone in my whole life, including my wife. And it's kind of
really
funny
weird
to say that, right?
So there's so many memories. I'm sure we'll forget half of them, but a lot of good stories to rehash here.
Yeah. People can follow you on Twitter if they're not already. What's your handle? And
It's Billy Lee, B-I-L-L-Y-L-E-A. I haven't been tweeting much recently, or really since I left the Jazz. It's pretty sporadic and more on the tech side, some Jazz in there, but I need to up my Twitter game again and get back in there. It's more kind of just following along on there lately and not interacting too much, but it'll come back.
So what are you doing? Like, what have you been up to since you left the Jazz? Has it been like two, three seasons?
Three seasons. I left right before the 2016 season, right before we got good. We can talk about that, but I went out to San Francisco, became a software engineer, found my way back here, worked a local tech company for 2 years. Now I'm working on my own, doing contract work and starting my own company.
I literally remember, I don't remember the day or anything, but I remember because we shared a cube for a minute and you're like, hey, I just started the Jazz Instagram account. Like, so I mean, you started the Jazz Instagram
account. Yeah, I think that was that first year, probably like early 2012. I'd have to go look, but I remember the first post was Al Jefferson, I think.
Yeah.
Just like not a great picture.
I just remember because I wasn't on Instagram and it was a brand new social, network. And you're like, hey, there's this new thing. It's almost like TikTok now or something like that where, you know, you, like I say, like you kind of just started and took things into a different space that they ever were in.
Well,
before.
And somebody else had the Utah Jazz handle. So we were something else to start.
What was it?
I might have been Utah_Jazz. I don't remember. We can talk about that too, but regarding Twitter. But they only had one post of like some turquoise jewelry or something. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I contacted Instagram, wrote a bunch of like got legal documents and stuff to trademark infringement and stuff. And
yeah.
Took that over and did the same thing with the Jazz. When I got there, it was Utah_Jazz.
On Twitter.
I mean, if you want to backtrack a little, like when I started there, I started 4 days before the 2011 lockout.
And did you know the lockout was coming?
Yeah. Well, so when I got the job, I basically got it right before that 2011 draft. And then when we drafted Burks and Cantor. And so I started that next Monday. And then the lockout was on Thursday. And then so the first 6 months until December like 10th or so, I think, was all lockout. We couldn't mention a single active player. We had to scrape the whole UtahJazz.com site of any active player. So it was not a chaotic time. There wasn't a lot to do those first 6 months. I was like, oh, this job's pretty easy. But we had nothing to really go with. It was scraping up old archive stories and maybe posting like one thing a week or two things a week. And there was so much negativity towards the team too. I just remember like every time we posted anything, it was just all anti, like, you know, come back, you're being way too greedy. It was all negative towards the team. And
during that lockout, like I worked for the Jazz, but we're in fan relations, if you remember when you first started. And it was a different thing going on over there. We were dealing with season ticket holders who were angry. In your shoes, that would be such a different or weird, you know, let's put out content, but you can't do anything with the current team. Like that would have been a hard time to start. When the lockout ended, how exciting Because you're just like thrust into it now. Like,
yeah, so it was pretty mellow for those first 6 months until December 2011. And then the lockout ended. And then I think the first games were right around Christmas. Or maybe there's the preseason games before that.
Yeah.
But we just had to, you know, flip the site back to the normal site with all the players and everything. And that was a lot of work on its own. And then prepare for the season. And I'd never worked a game or anything. And yeah. So it was kind of just thrust into it. I remember, you know, first time, one of those first preseason games against Portland, I believe. Oh, here I'm getting kind of pushed into the locker room. All of a sudden I'm in the locker room for the first time with players. It was just kind of different, hit me all at once, and just kind of learned on the job. I remember kind of going the first time, like through, there was like a hallway down to that old locker room, just seeing it for the first time and being in there was a little weird, but then it was just work, you know, trying to get content with our little flip cam. We had like $150 flip cam that we were interviewing with everybody with, and we couldn't even edit at that time. I had like the worst computer, just an old PC that was given, that was probably like 5 years old, given down to me. You couldn't even edit video on it. It was so bad. I think it ended up years later on, maybe you were able to edit a little bit, but we were basically just uploading videos straight from the flip cam. Another kind of funny part of that is you're in these press scrums with a flip cam and you get no respect basically. And all of the local TV camera guys that just have these giant cameras, they just, it's so funny. They have no concept of space and they're bumping into you and mm-hmm. pushing you around. And it's kind of, I don't think average fans have any concept of what those press scrums are really like, trying mm-hmm. to get the shot, trying to, mm-hmm. you have to like hold your arm up for 5 straight minutes over the top with a camera, and it gets pretty not fun at times.
By like the 4-minute, 50-second year, you know, like
yeah,
the video
shaking a little bit. And I was also, I mean, I preach this to you all the time, like, got to be careful not to get anybody naked in the or in the background. And there's always so many variables to mm-hmm. look at, like try not to have anything in the side of the shots. And
right.
So trying to get a good shot, but also under not ideal circumstances. Yeah. And at the start there with a flip cam, and then a little bit better cam, and then a little bit better cam, but still nothing like they're working with now.
Oh, I know. I do remember, like, even 2, 3, 4 years after, you know, you would remind me, don't get anybody naked. Like, which was always a good reminder, because when you are in the locker room, you're not really even paying attention to other people, just the guy you're talking to.
Well, and you're shooting the guy straight on, but there's a guy right next to him basically stripping down and changing yeah. sometimes. And like, I just knew it was going to happen mm-hmm. at some point to some teams. Mm-hmm. And I think it has, but it was just something that I was always really worried was going to happen to us.
Yeah. I want to get back to like, this is like kind of the meat of our talk, but I want to go way back to little Billy Lee growing up in Park City. What is the era or the teams or players that, when you think about being a kid and you think about, you know, loving the Jazz, who are they and what memories come to mind?
I don't know where to date everything, but my first like thing I can put a date on was, I remember watching the 88 playoffs versus the Lakers. Kind of dates me a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like 10 years old or 9 years old. It was conference semis against Magic and Kareem and everybody. And they were supposed to cream the Jazz. And I remember game 6 in the Salt Palace, the Jazz won by like 20 or more and took it back to LA. And it was a huge deal. And then going forward from there, like, you know, to backtrack a little bit, I don't know if this was before or after that, but I won a McDonald's contest.
Okay.
To get free tickets to the Jazz game and shoot a free throw at center or on the court at halftime.
Did you do that? Did you make it?
I don't remember. I'm guessing that was before the 88 playoffs, but then, you know, went to a bunch of games in the Salt Palace there. I went to a game that Stockton didn't play because of illness, I think, which was one of two games he missed other than his knee surgery that one year.
Yeah. Were you bummed?
It was so long ago. I'm sure I was, but I was at the Delta Center grand opening.
Oh, cool.
And so was that 92, I think. I remember the 93 Bulls triple overtime game was like a huge game burned into the memory. I was lucky enough that a lot of my friends had parents that had season ticket, like pretty good season tickets and stuff. So I got to go to a lot of games, and I was at the Stockton assist record.
Cool.
And the Stockton steals record.
Both. Nice.
And
Nuggets and Celtics.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I still have those certificates.
Oh, that's cool.
And the tickets.
Did they like pass out?
Yeah, they gave certificates to everybody as they're leaving. I just realized that, you know, Stockton's assist record is, everybody says it's untouchable.
Yeah.
But what do you think about Luka having a chance at it? Because he's still 20 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Stockton didn't get to the league till like 22.
Yeah.
And so I think if there's anybody that has a chance at it,
yeah,
it's Luka, because he's averaging what, like 9 assists now. I'm not even sure what he's at now, but he has the potential to go for, you know, a long time and have the head start that Stockton didn't have.
I think that's a good name to bring up, like, for sure. Like,
it's the only person I've ever thought had a chance at it.
Yeah.
But it's so early.
But it's crazy to think about, though, like the years.
Right. Where Stockton, he was averaging 14.5.
Yeah. For a whole season.
Right.
So if Luka can, but the thing about Luka is he's averaging so many points. Like, right. It's almost like LeBron-ish.
But, so you never know how his game's going to evolve, but I think there's a chance there where I've never thought anybody else, you know,
has been on the scene,
Chris Paul or anybody that people would bring up, didn't really have a chance. Yeah,
that's interesting. So I hope not.
In 97 finals, I got to go to game 4.
That's awesome.
So that was pretty cool. So that was kind of the main range of like 88 to 97. And then I went off to college. So, which I went to college in California at UC Santa Barbara, and all of my friends were Lakers fans. And that's when the Jazz swept the Lakers.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
In the 98 playoffs, conference finals.
Yeah.
So that was a good time to rub it in their face. And I won some bets.
Yeah. Those were good memories. Like the heartbreak too. Like, I think about how heartbroken I was as a kid, both the 94, 95 when the Rockets won the championship.
And then the 96 when the Sonics
beat us in game seven,
that was a tough one too.
And even the lockout year in 99, cause we were supposed to be the team, and then we lost to the Blazers in the second round. Like that to me, I was so, cause I was living, you know, in Oregon, and that was the time when the Jazz were going down and the Blazers were kind of like the new kid on the block, and them and the Kings were that like cool. They were like the cool teams of like the late 90s, early 2000s.
And the Lakers hadn't quite clicked yet.
Right.
So I actually that year went to a game, Jazz versus Lakers at the Forum.
Okay.
And that was the last year of the Forum, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, it would have been 99, was that?
It sounds about right. Yeah.
And it was the first, I think it might have even been the first game the Jazz wore those alternate blacks.
Okay. The black and copper.
Yeah.
How do you feel about those? Like, do you feel like those stand?
Those ones at the time I think I liked, but they don't stand up to the test of time.
How do you feel about the Purple Mountain jerseys? Because here's the thing, and you might think the same thing, is when I mean, they were fine what they were, but like as a kid, I wasn't like obsessed. Like now that they're back, like it seems like everyone, even nationally, just thinks that they're like the gold standard of jerseys.
I think they look decent, but I don't have like a sentimental attachment to them or anything for some reason. It's really interesting because, I remember when we used to do those things when we'd go to the mall with players before the season, and we would hit the streets. We'd take a few players to the mall and just go say hi to fans. And I remember Marvin Williams was in a fan's store and he saw one of those old jerseys or something. He's like, man, when are we bringing this back? And, all the players really liked those, which is interesting.
Do you think it's because they all grew up seeing like the classic games? And
I think it's just retro, whatever. Yeah,
because I'm a fan more of like the retro of like the purple note, you know, like what Stockton Malone wore when they were first coming up.
Well,
I like that one more.
That's what also, what was that year, like 2000, it must have been 2010 or
with the green.
The green is
the Sunday.
That
the
was Sunday such a marketing jersey. Phenomenon at the time. You would walk around the arena because that's before all these teams had as many alternates and everything.
Yeah.
And everybody had those green and gold shirts. I was like, man, we should switch to this because people like it so much better.
I love those jerseys.
Obviously now I think they got a good thing going on. And
yeah.
Shout out to Ben Barnes.
For sure.
And his team. Ben's a very talented designer.
Yes, he is. Someone who's like meant to be what they are. Yep. Like seems like Ben is like, he was just like destined to do that job.
Absolutely.
Another thing I wanted to talk about when you were a kid is the All-Star Game. So the All-Star Game, pretty awesome news. You know, the 30-year anniversary is going to be back in Salt Lake. So as a kid in 93, what are your memories of like the event, the weekend? Did you go to anything? What about that brings
to
your memory?
So I went to the jam session, which was kind of, I don't know, even know how you describe that or if they still have it, but it was kind of just lots of exhibits and, you know, 3-on-3 contests with old legends and stuff like that. And it was in the Salt Palace. And there was like Karl Malone had his semi truck there. It was like a bunch of random stuff. But then I remember it was like a giant snowstorm that weekend. And all these tourists and media people were kind of freaking out because they'd never seen something like that. It was just a huge blizzard. And then I didn't get to go to the game or All-Star Saturday night or anything. But I do remember watching the game, Stockton Malone, you know, co-MVP, but it went into overtime. And what I remember is that the broadcast on NBC ended right at the game. So you didn't get to watch the ceremony or anything.
Oh, that sucks.
And it's totally different than it is now where they'll have like an hour post-game show and it's all centered around, you know, promoting the game and everything. But this was on just different area. Like, oh, we got to next 60, well, not 60 minutes, but you know, next program is
Dateline or
needs to start. Yeah.
That's one of the good things about Bill and working with Bill is that he remembers, you remember like details about like everything.
One other detail I remember about that game is they, at the intros, they did like a laser etching on the court of their players' signatures, or maybe they weren't their actual signatures, but it like wrote out their players, the players' names and intros while they were being introduced. And it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. As a kid, you were probably digging that. Back to like working for the team, we kind of talked about like when you started, how did you like get the job? Like kind of like, did you see an opening and you're just like, oh, I'm going to go for this?
I think I saw a listing on Craigslist actually. So back 2008, I think it was 08. I applied for the job, had an interview and just had a horrible interview.
Okay.
And I didn't get the job. I remember there was Brendan, our old boss, was one guy, and there was also another representative in the interview from KFan. Okay. And they were kind of both hiring for positions. They're like, oh, we'll both interview you at once. But I didn't want that KFan job, and I feel that I torpedoed myself to the Jazz in some way.
Okay.
But I just had a horrible interview, didn't get the job. Jared got it and took it for 3 years or so, and then he left. And so I think it was a Craigslist ad again. I think I had a bunch of keyword like Google alerts set up.
So if it ever came back.
Yeah. Well, that and a bunch of other stuff. And I saw that and applied again. I'd been like not a formal software engineer, but kind of freelance web developer. And so I had the web skills. I went into the interview like way over prepared this time. They asked for, you know, write up a blog post, create this graphic, do all these different things. And I spent a lot of time on it, way over prepared. And I think I just knew I had the job the whole way going through that.
Was it with Brendan again?
Yeah, Brendan again. And I think, you know, they said they had like a couple hundred resumes or something. It came down to one other guy and me.
And that was 2011.
That was 2011. So like I said, the lockout then starts 4 days after I start. So that kind of shaped the first year.
Yeah.
If we go back to that first year, it was, you know, I show up at the Jazz. I didn't even have it. It was really weird. Like, I think they've changed the culture there quite a bit. I didn't have a chair. I had to go to Costco my first day and buy a chair, which was really weird. Like, there might have been a chair, but it was so bad that I had to go buy my own. I mentioned the horrible computer equipment, but they're like, just wait till the lockout ends and we'll talk about getting a Mac. And so finally got a computer after the lockout ended that was decent. In my interview, they hardly asked me about social media because it just wasn't that big at the time. But it was more about, you know, my tech skills handling UtahJazz.com. Mm-hmm. And
building the site, yeah.
Yeah, but then Twitter and all the other social platforms really became what the job was about. I think when I took over, there was about 30,000 Twitter followers.
Dang.
And I remember just that first media day after the lockout, we gained like 1,000 Twitter followers that day. And I was like, holy cow, this is crazy. Now it's like 1,000, who cares? But right. That was pretty cool. Just, you know, just putting your work out there and thousands and totally. Hundreds of thousands sometimes seeing your work.
Do you remember the first thing you tweeted?
No, because it was,
I bet you could
it
go
was
back
probably
and find
during
it.
The lockout or right before it.
I want to go back and like search that.
You know,
date.
It was probably, I think right before the lockout, they like re-upped CJ Miles or something.
Okay.
But it was like one of those standard press-like tweets. Like somebody can go fact check this one. I'm probably wrong, but we came up with the game hashtags.
Yeah.
So it was like UTA at POR.
Yeah.
And I think we were the first to really do that in all of sports. And then you'd start seeing it all over the place on ESPN and stuff after that. So it was that first game when the Jazz played at Portland in the preseason game. And I'd given David Locke a list of all the game hashtags. And he put it out there before. I was like, oh, I'm not the first one to put it out there. But
from the way I remember it is that you started that.
Yeah. I mean, and then it caught on pretty big locally where we were – Twitter trending every night for the game with that hashtag. And I mean, I don't think Twitter trends are that that accurate because I've seen a lot of spots when I would be like, no way. Mm-hmm. But all of the local media was using them for that first year or two. And it kind of like centralized the conversation with the fan base, which was pretty cool.
I can't even remember when I started in the department. I mean, I think it was the next year, like towards the start of the next season. So here comes...
Well, I think you actually started as an intern in 2012, like early 2012.
I think it was like January 2012.
Yeah.
So I come in and I still remember my interview with Craig Sanders and Brendan Burke, who were our bosses. And it was meant to be an archival internship. That's what it was supposed to be, someone who would archive photos and video clips into an archive because there was really no archive of any kind. And I remember in my interview, Craig said to me, because I had done a few things for you, kind of like writing random little blogs for the site.
Right,
and I had done stuff, and Craig, they knew who I was, obviously. And Craig's like, I'm just worried that you are too much into content and not doing what we want you to do, which is archiving stuff. And I'm like, hey, listen, I will do anything you want. But then I think like a month later, I think you and you just, there was just more of a need.
I think I was drowning in work, so.
And then I got to join Bill in his, we call it the double wide. It was just this cubicle that was just really narrow, but it was long. And we sat in there together for a while. I think I had like that old computer you're mentioning. And we just started, I think about it, and we just started trying to do stuff because You mentioned you were drowning. Like there's so much, and the average fan has no idea, but there's so much to do on the website, and especially at that time.
Right. There's ticketing, sponsorship,
so much
community.
Yeah.
And then just general maintenance of updating graphics. And
let alone the games. Right.
Yeah.
So you're like, hey, we need an intern. I need Matt to kind of, he can archive, but he can also help me go to practice or whatever. And it kind of just started from there. There were some bumps in stuff along the way, you know, trying, because we were really just trying to do stuff that had never been done, at least in from our department, you know. Right. Like there was the broadcast and there was the radio, and they were kind of just the media, at least internally, and here we were trying to like be in the included. And a lot of times, you know, mostly because they didn't know what social was about and if it was valuable and whatnot. But you know, from my perspective, now, at the time, I know this, like I was always really frustrated because I wanted to do stuff that either we had seen other teams do or just things that I knew would be great, stuff that they're doing now.
Yeah.
And
we knew it was going to happen, and it was a matter of fighting for that and usually getting told no.
Yeah.
And it was frustrating, and you're also battling all the time with sponsorship, ticketing, PR. Mm-hmm. there's a huge power struggle, or for lack of a better word, I don't know what it is, but there's a battle going on between those departments for different interests.
Yeah. And we were kind of like the new kid, so to speak. I talked to Spencer Hall, my last podcast, and he brought it up that I never really thought about. He's like, hey, the management was really just the same guys mostly who were like Larry's friends, and they're so used to just like opening the building and selling it out, and they didn't even have to think about anything and think about social media. They didn't even know how it worked. They didn't even want to, you know, pay 2 seconds to it. So now that I am removed and I'm not as angry, quote angry, about not getting to do stuff, I think about it that, and I'm a little more like logical of, you know, this was just these guys, more or less Matt and Bill, trying to do things that they didn't feel comfortable letting us do. So I'm not as, you know, like worked up now, but at the time, you know, we would see the Cavs or the Magic or whoever putting out these like behind the scenes clips, and we're right. Like, please let us. So do you remember?
And they also, something people didn't realize is there was like two of us working all the content, social and site, and other teams had literally 15 people doing the same mm-hmm. job. So we were getting compared to these other teams and having the access barriers we had, mm-hmm. it was frustrating, but then, you know, small wins here and there.
Yeah. Do you remember meeting with Dennis in his office?
I do.
That just came to my mind.
Yes, yeah. We took, I think we had authority from our boss to contact Dennis and say, hey, we have some ideas. Mm-hmm. We'd like to run by you. So I emailed him, and he was like, sure, come over later today. And we thought he'd say next week or something. So yeah. We kind of scrambled, went over to his office, met with him and Justin. And, you know, Dennis obviously has a lot of reasons for not wanting to do certain types mm-hmm. of content and everything. But, I mean, they're very receptive to listening to us and giving us some ideas and everything. But then I think our bosses didn't like that we kind of went over there and or emailed Dennis directly. So I remember that being a little bit of trouble for us.
Right. And for people that don't know or whatever, you know, Dennis Lindsay, who's now, what is his title? He's not the GM anymore. He's like the executive VP of basketball. Right. He's really, I'm sure it's still this way. He's really kind of like the ultimate gatekeeper between the team and anyone, especially internally. So that's why we would go to Dennis, and because he was really the guy that would say yes or no. There may have been some different routes we could have taken, but we were like, hey, let's just go to the guy who says yes and no. And I remember like we kind of took some examples from other teams and said, hey, you know, here's a clip of LeBron working out and is on the Cavs website. And I remember he was pretty receptive, and they were just like, oh yeah, they're really, you know, it was almost like they didn't realize what was out there. And he's like, really? Like the Cavs put this out? And we're like, yeah, like it's on Cavs.com. And
you know, but I remember from that meeting, Dennis made some really good points, because I think it was that one was actually right after we drafted Trey Burke, because we wanted to do like a rookie series on Trey Burke kind of behind the scenes. Dennis is like, he hasn't earned it yet. You can't.
That's true.
So we had to kind of readjust our expectations. It can't be just about Trey Burke. It has to be about Trey Burke and this other guy, Rudy and Neto.
Yeah.
And so just little things like that kind of come back, and think about how your expectations kind of change over the years of what we could get.
You laid the groundwork, right? Like the stuff that we were trying to do is, I feel like, in a large part, kind of why they get to do some of the things they're doing now. You know, do you have a sense of pride at all for when you see a cool video?
I mean, I think it
would have
gotten there, you know, just the whole league, social and content and all of professional sports kind of went up between that time of 2011 to now.
Yeah.
Just so, you know, back, we couldn't even put
highlights,
GIFs,
or
player GIF of game action on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
because the league's broadcasting rights didn't loud until I think 2013, 2014. Like that,
yeah. Do you remember how exciting it was when we could put highlights or whatever?
And then we didn't have access to the actual highlight system. I'm drawing a blank on the name.
It's called like Clip Pro or...
Yeah, Clip
Pro. WSC.
Yeah, WSC. That basically gives you all the highlights cut up.
It's amazing.
Ranked and with tagged as, you know, this is a Rudy Gobert steal. You can go search for that and have it almost instantly and, you know, put it up on social within a minute.
I would say like a minute
of the play happening. But I mean, that was towards the end. That was the last 2 years probably of my time there. So those first couple years was a lot harder to get
trying
your
to
content.
Figure out what to even put on there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I remember even like just using emojis was a big deal that people were like, are you sure you should be doing that?
Right. It's crazy how ancient history, even if you think about like 5-6 years ago, tech-wise or social-wise, like it was just like completely different.
I mean, if you look back at our stuff now, you'd be like, that's like not very interesting or whatever compared to what they do. But at the time, I think NBA Twitter in general was really kind of pushing everything forward in that realm of being creative and exciting and, you know, getting people gathered in on a conversation.
Yeah. One element to the job that you had, that we had, that most people don't think about, and I don't bring it up to like have people be like in any way like feel bad or whatever, but the amount of time you spend during a season. So I mentioned how I feel like in a 5 year span, I saw Bill Lee more than anyone in my life. And it's because we worked a lot. And when you have that job, you want to, like it's, you want that job. It's a really awesome job. But it's also can be quite a grind, especially during down seasons. So walk us through a game day and what goes into a game day from the social media person for the Jazz.
I would get to the arena. So back in those days, my full tenure there, we worked in the basement of the arena or second floor.
With no windows,
underground. And sometimes on a game day, I would literally be down there from 8, 9 a.m. until midnight without like some, usually we would leave for lunch for an hour or something, but some days so busy that I did not see the light of day. Those first 3 years I was there, I was way into it and working. I did track my hours at one point and I gave, you know, I think it was like somewhere in the 80 to 100 hour range.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And you know, I wasn't getting paid overtime or anything, and it was grueling, but I loved it. And I would put money on it that I might have spent more time in that arena during that period than anybody else.
Yeah, I bet.
And then you add on to that the road games and stuff and the weekends that you're working from home as well.
Yeah. It's a grind.
But yeah, to get back to your question, get to the arena, like, you know, normal 8:30, 9 time, probably post game day, you know, promoting the game on TV and tickets if it's a home game.
Going to shoot around.
Go to shoot around, get videos. Those first couple years we did shoot around at the arena, which was, you know, pretty convenient because then you could just go upstairs and post the videos. But then after, later on, it was at ZBBC. You know, we had normal content and such to get out through the day, prepare graphics and other. You know, later on, we started doing more sponsorship stuff. You had to get out and have prepared for the game. We'd have a pregame meal, I think at like 5 o'clock every night. Not that great. Suffer through that. And then go to the court, get some pregame footage, usually hang out a little bit. Then the game starts and it's pretty much nonstop
and
from
like
there till midnight.
It's like a sprint. Yeah.
And then especially if it was an 8:30 game. I mean, there were some games. If it was an 8:30 game and then it went to overtime, I remember sometimes I left at like 2 a.m.
Yeah, you were the last car in the parking lot of that giant parking lot. 98% of the time, you're like, I can't believe this is my job. It's so cool.
But then I did get burned out, I think, that my fourth and fifth year.
Yeah.
Where...
it's inevitable.
I wasn't putting as much time. I couldn't put as much time into it. Plus, those first 3 years, I was driving down from Park City, So I would get up, leave my house at like 7, 7:30, and get home, you know, after midnight on almost every game night. People don't realize also that, like, if they're on the East Coast for a 5-game trip, it was back then the 4 games and 5 nights. I would get burned out just from, you know, working those games, having to post everything.
Yep.
But it was also an awesome job.
Right. No, for sure. One memory that just came to my mind that I'm sure you have lots of memories about is J.P. Gibson. Yep. And it's something that I didn't even like think about before we started talking. But for people who don't remember, J.P., amazing little guy. I want to say it was 2015 or 16.
I remember we had Dante at the time. That was probably his rookie year.
So it's like 2014 or so, because yeah. I think Dante was a rookie in 2014. And JP is a 5-year-old who is battling cancer. And the Jazz, during the open scrimmage, signed him for the day to come and, you know, be a member of the Jazz for the night. You know, he got to sign his contract and, you know, warm up with the team and play in the scrimmage. And it was just a really awesome thing. But what made it so cool was JP and his personality. And Bill and I would say mostly Bill, we were just covering the event, the scrimmage, and JP was a part of it. And then, like I mentioned, JP was so just awesome and just so relaxed and so cute. And it became a mega story nationally that JP alone, but what the Jazz were doing with him. And it was one of these nights where we were at the arena and just things were just going crazy. So from your point of view, because from my point of view, I was kind of like with the camera following around, but you were really running the social and the web and putting things out and seeing all the interactions and seeing all the mentions. And so from your point of view, what was that night like?
Well, I remember earlier in the day, I don't even remember it coming about before that day, but we, you know, we're told there was this press conference with him. So you went down and got that footage. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize anything at that time. But I had set up to live stream that scrimmage. And so that was a lot of work because I had to get it all set up with the like game ops video
control. Like
tapping into the video board for the feed. And then I tapped into Locke did the audio for
That's
us on
right.
the court. And I think it was being prepared for that moment was the biggest thing that I'm proud of that is yeah. that we had all the ducks in place, because I don't think if we didn't have that footage with Locke's call on it,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that goes viral.
Yeah.
It was the way that, you know, it all came out, and it was a like 58 second clip. It was like perfect for
yeah.
going viral. And I remember that night when we got the clip, and I was like, you were posting it, I think. And I told you, make sure to put the UtahJazz.com watermark on
there
or something, right?
I remember that, yeah.
But that was right when Facebook video was just launching. And we put it on YouTube. And we put the YouTube link or embed on Facebook. And somebody else stole some other random Facebook page, took our video and posted it as a Facebook video. And Facebook virality took theirs like to, I think, 20 million views.
That's
and
right.
ours didn't get that. But it wasn't about the credit for us. But that from then on, we were all about Facebook video.
Right.
Because it just blew up. We still got, I think, 5 or 6 million views on YouTube. And then all the national play got them on Ellen with Hayward and Favors.
I mean, it was on SportsCenter.
We won an award for it. Which I'm going to need that back at some point.
What do you mean? It's so lovely on my mantle. I was just going to look up real quick. I wonder if it's still the most viewed Jazz video on their YouTube. But yeah, you bring up a good point with being prepared, like making sure that because doing live sports or live events can be really tricky, because you can only plan for so much, then you just have to react and hope you get the shot. So yeah, being prepared for that.
And
I mean, kudos.
Live video was some of the trickiest stuff, and we never really had anything go wrong, but it was always so nerve-wracking because we would do so it looks like
still the
most
popular.
6.1 million YouTube views, which you know, it's a lot, but it could have been, I mean, the Facebook one had 20 million views that
yeah
way back then. Just being prepared for that kind of stuff with the live video, because we used to do live streams from the draft.
That's right.
Back to the Areno Jumbotron. Yeah, and like having that kind of stuff actually work.
Yeah, I was always proud of
always
that.
So stressful, but yeah. It takes a lot of like making sure everything
thinking
is in
about
place.
The details.
Yeah, thinking about the details. Yeah. And because we would literally be at the draft, not know when we would have this booth available for locked
and
interview
we didn't know
the players.
When the pick would come.
Right, because you're sharing this booth with, I think, like five to 10 other teams. Mm-hmm. And we would have like a 10-minute window mm-hmm. to interview Rodney Hood mm-hmm. in there and live stream it back to
the draft party
on the Jumbotron. And so there was a lot of pressure and making sure that kind of stuff, but you get a little bit of a adrenaline kick making sure that
it's
all
true.
Goes through.
You're right about like the adrenaline thing of like when the moment hits and we just drafted Dante Exum, right? With the fifth pick and he's now walking towards us and you just click into go mode. And I think there's an element of like being experienced and kind of knowing what to do in the moment. But yeah, just like that, it's live and anything can happen. Like it was, you know, pretty cool to be a part of. And it was cool to be to something that you captured or created and put it out to the world. Like that was when I think back to like things I miss, like, yeah, you miss games. Kind of, I mean, I always tell people like I went to every Jazz game for 10 years and it's right. like, you don't necessarily like you miss
you
it.
You get a little
don't.
Oversaturated. Like I used to watch every game. Now I don't necessarily
pick
like
and choose.
I missed the Sixers game the other night mm-hmm. and then I saw the score and I was like, okay, yeah.
It's funny. How
it's
that,
not that
it
big of
that
a deal where before I think I was a bigger fan before I worked there.
Yeah.
But then it became a job and then you saw so much mm-hmm. and you lived it. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of just, I've been decompressing for 3 years.
It's true. And for me, I've been out for 2 years cause I stayed for another year and like, I couldn't be more accurate that when you work there, and it's just funny, it's just like if you think about any job and anybody has, so if anybody's listening and you're a lawyer, you know, before you become a lawyer, you dream about law school and you dream about doing cases, but then when you're a lawyer, you're like, oh gosh. But when you're doing the social media and content and website for the Jazz, naturally you're probably going to be a huge fan. But then when you do it year after year, game after game, it becomes a job. And I always would always tell people it kind of like sucks the fan out of you because it's your job, even though you do still care and you want them to succeed and it's exciting and it is fun, but the fan in you is kind of gone. And yeah, I'm still kind of like bringing it back into my life also right. 2 years later.
And it's not like anything was bad, but you see the business side of it and it just like takes some of the fandom out.
Yeah. Hey, that's just how it goes, yeah. I guess. So here's a quick game that I want to play. I'm going to say a player's name, and you say the first word or a phrase or memory that comes to mind. And these are all players that we worked around, so maybe there's personal ties to them. So, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm a little scared.
No, don't be scared. Al Jefferson.
Al Jefferson, my first memory is that, or my first thing that popped into my mind was the first media day after the lockout. And I went over to interview him one-on-one. And it was like really the first thing. And I, you know, had the flip cam and interviewed, I think Derek Garduño took me over to him and he's like, let's go.
Yeah.
And so had to come up with a couple of questions and he was sitting on the bleachers there at ZBBC. And so that's my first memory
cool.
of him.
Not the I Sweat So Much.
Oh, that was a great video. Oh, that was a clip from the Jazz post-game radio show, I think, that I cut. And he talks about how sweaty he is. It was really great.
Big Al, he was a...
I still have that. I should dig it up.
You should dig it up. He was one of these guys that you could always tell what mood he was in. Because he was just who he was and he would give his honest opinion and honest voice no matter what. Yeah,
he was underappreciated. Like he was an offensive machine. People forget like that mm-hmm. little baby hook he had, and you know he had deficiencies on defense and such. But mm-hmm. I mean, that lockout year, the Jazz were expectations were not that high. Mm-hmm. I think because it was 66 games for the lockout year, And I think they're projected to win like 29 and they won 36. I think they were 36 and 30 that year and made the eighth seed in the playoffs. And that's where, if you remember, Jefferson and Millsap embracing
the
like,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we beat out the Suns for that last spot. Right. It was a pretty good race to the end. I think that was the year we beat the Mavs in a triple overtime game at home too. That was a big game towards the end of the year.
Okay.
That might've been the Wet Willie game
too. Oh, was it?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Yeah.
Triple overtime, I believe so. And I, because I remember that first year, I sat on the visitor press,
the platform,
over the visitor tunnel. And I actually wish I would have kept doing that, like, because then I moved to the home side. But that on that visitor side, you're always, you know, talking to the visiting beat writers, and they had scouts sit over there sometimes, and you just get a lot of interesting perspectives and stories.
Yeah.
And kind of wish I would have stayed over there.
Yeah, and you probably got to. I know from my point of view, like I loved when I got to interact with other team social people.
Right, that was probably one of my favorite parts of the job too.
Yeah,
we could talk more about that, but like we had an NBA Facebook group that I think is still going, but we, you know, it was Chris and TJ in Portland, I think, started it.
Yep,
and it was just a place for us to kind of kick ideas around and do fun stuff together. We did that NBA movies, that kind of, remember that?
Oh, yeah. Like, yep, I remember.
Movie posters based on NBA players.
I do remember Rudy.
Lots of fun. Home Alone.
Yeah, that's right.
Lots of fun games like that between the teams. And then like fun, you know, especially like Portland was really good. Milwaukee, Atlanta. And all those guys are awesome guys. Like Nick with the Bucks. I'm still like friends with these guys on social and follow them.
Yeah,
and
it's fun. It was always cool for me when you know the other person. Like for me, I became friends with Colin Breen, who did the Clippers.
Right.
And it was at the perfect time because we played them in the playoffs that year when we beat them in seven games. And when you're literally kind of buddies, or you at least know the other person tweeting from the other team's account, the jabbering, because you know it's, you know it's in just good fun. Like to me, that was always the most fun, was when the team could tweet at the other team and just kind of have a fun back and forth.
Portland with Chris, we did a haiku game.
Yeah, I remember.
One time when all the tweets were in haiku.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I mean, it was just like we came up with it. I think I'd mentioned it to him, that idea, a while back. And then like an hour before the game, he's like, hey, we gonna do this?
Okay, a couple more guys. That's only been one. Trey Burke.
Trey, I'll first remember, this is a little bit of a funny story, right when he got off the plane from the draft, I went with Steve Miller to the airport. This was one of our kind of early breakthrough content things, is I got to go just alone with Steve Miller to the airport to pick up Trey, Rudy, and Howell. They get off the plane, and Trey is wearing Sacramento Kings shorts.
After he's been drafted.
I can say this now since he's not with the team, I guess. And it's been a few years, but so they had to take him in, you know,
go
change your shorts.
No one would have known that. Yeah.
But then, you know, just filming him all the way in the car with his family back to the training facility and him walking around there for the first time. That's what I'll kind of remember. But him, I also followed around at All-Star Weekend 20, which, what was the New Orleans one? 2015.
Well,
no, 2014.
There was in New Orleans, and then it went back to New Orleans a few years later. But I think it was 2014.
Because I went to 2013, Jeremy Evans.
In Brooklyn?
That was Houston.
You went to one in Brooklyn also.
I went to years. So he won, backtracking. So 2011-12, the lockout year. That's when we did, that's another thing to bring up. We did the whole Let Jeremy Dunk campaign.
Yeah.
Which... we started with a couple of tweets and then we ended up flip cam videoing him doing some dunks at the practice facility with Earl Watson, was feeding him, having him jump over Earl and stuff. And those were getting on PTI.
Yeah.
It was really crazy. I think it added to the authenticity of it that it wasn't a professional looking video. It was just kind of a little crappy flip cam vid.
Well, and that's what I love. Like, I think how cool it is, because like now so much of that is expected, but like you were really trying to do stuff for the first time.
Right. Like, well, I think both of us, we were just wanted to do what was right for the fan.
Yeah.
But that made it frustrating at the same time, because then when sponsorship started getting more into it, like not just with the Jazz, but the whole league. At the, you know, 2011, 12, there wasn't much sponsorship on social. Mm-hmm. And then for the teams, but then it definitely started, teams started trying stuff out, and we had stuff forced on us, which took some of the authenticity.
Yeah, totally.
Thinking, always trying to do best by the fan, it took some of the authenticity out of it.
Yeah.
I feel when you had to slap a graphic on a photo, that was, I was more into it for the artistic of the art.
Totally.
Like the artistic nature of it.
Yeah. You were the door to the fan. Yeah.
That was what we aimed for.
Yeah, totally. I think that's another reason why we got along so well, as we just had, even though we're pretty different, I think, in our personalities, but we have a lot of similarities in the way we went about what we did. And I think we just had that focus of like, what's best for the fan. You know, like we would get sponsorship people or whoever, hey, you should tweet this or you should do that. And if we didn't think, because being fans ourselves, it was easy to know what was right for the fan. And we would, I'd push back and I'd be like, well, I don't think that's a good idea. And, you know, that didn't win me any points with certain people, but I didn't care because our mission was what's right for the fan. That's just how I was. And I think how we were.
Sorry, the rabbit hole for all of these are going down.
No, don't apologize. It's meant to like spur up some fun memories. Enes Kanter.
Enes, he would always, whenever he would see me, he would do these weird, and I had a camera and I was trying to take a photo of him at the practice facility or something. He would do some weird hand gesture, like acting weird for the camera, and Dennis would never let us post any of those. So I knew like they were, anytime he saw me taking a picture of him, you couldn't use it.
Yeah.
Cause he would do like weird faces or whatever.
Gestures or something.
Yeah. He would be like on the treadmill running to the ZBBC that had the glass looking in there. Yeah. And I'd be there with the camera and he's like doing all this weird stuff.
It's funny real quick about Enes. Cause we were around him quite a bit.
Yeah.
And when we traded him, obviously he kind of like torched the team and a lot of the fans and whatever, but like I always think back and I never really got the vibe. Like he always seemed like he was pretty jolly.
I remember also one other story about, he did seem, you know, always happy around us and stuff, but we were doing the Hit the Streets one year and we go pick him up and they just had a practice and he had gotten hit in the nose.
Okay.
And he was like in pain and he was riding in the front seat of Patty Bolly's car. She was the community relations director to the mall. And he was just didn't say a word the entire time.
Oh, and it's such an interesting person. Okay. Here's one that I think we have some fond memories of is Alec Burks. What comes to mind when you think of Alec Burks?
Well, you know, I think you're fishing for him always asking for a shout out. Every time he sees us, especially me, like we would make eye contact. I mean, you've seen like we'd be at City Creek Food Court across the like 200 feet away and make eye contact.
He's standing
sees me,
in light at Subway.
And he throws up his arms like, "How about a shout out?" Like I saw him at a movie theater once. He's like, "Where's my shout out?"
It was amazing because it happened every time.
Yeah. There's that time I think I heard you mention on a previous podcast where
in the locker room
and he's got about five or six media guys around him right in the middle of an interview and he sees me enter the locker room, stops everything in front of everybody. "Where's my shout out? Can I get a shout out?" And one time I reminded him, I was like, "Do you really like?" He wouldn't tweet at all. It's like, "You need to tweet."
He didn't do anything with the shout outs.
Right. And I'm like, "You have 25,000 followers at the time. Do you realize that's more than this entire stadium full of people following you?" And he's like, "Oh, I got to get it to 100.
LAB. And it was, that moment in the locker room was like the topper.
Well, we had a video of a compilation of a bunch of these.
Yeah, I wish I still had that.
Because it was literally every time
And he would just be like, "Shout me out."
Yeah.
And I remember, because every now and then he'd be like, "Just give me the password." Because he would say, like, "Give me the password." And I don't know if you remember this one time, I said, "Here's the password. It's Alec Burks 10. And he says, "Oh, no. I know that's not it." Like, I could just picture AB sitting there on the bus going somewhere and he, like, literally tried Alec Burks 10. Just the way he said that
to me. So it all started right after the lockout. First, what do they call that? The media day, but where they're getting all the player images and whatnot.
Production
it's like media day. Day one, production day.
Yeah, it's like the internal
and it was thing. At the arena that year, and he was the. They were doing stuff on center court at the arena, and it was all dark in there. They were getting these cool photos, and he was waiting his turn, just kind of shooting some shots. And I had just started talking to him, and he's like, "Oh, you run all the social media and stuff?" And I probably like we talked for like 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and that was the most we ever conversed, probably, other than the "Can I get a shout out?"
Yeah.
Over 5 years, he said that to me probably a couple hundred times.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if he probably doesn't know my name.
He'd recognize you. That
he'd still recognize me.
I want to go to, like, he's on the Warriors. Like, I literally think it'd be amazing. Like, we go to the next Jazz Warriors game and just stand down there and see what happens. Well, one guy that I wished I could have worked with more was Donovan, because I left just a couple months after we drafted him.
Right.
And he, because now guys come through and they get it. They get social media, not like in 2012, right? And Donovan was so... just so kind and
when
so
we started,
cool with it.
Hardly any of the players, if any, were on social media.
Well, remember how we would try to like figure out, is this guy's handle? Yeah. Is that guy's handle?
I got so many guys, they're blue check marks.
That's right. Yeah, Bill was the go-to guy for the verified. Well,
and I know a lot of, you know, the fans hated me out there for shutting some down.
Like fake ones?
Fake ones. There was like fake Jerry Sloan and stuff. But then like there was the Utah Jazz podcast.
I remember.
But we were told, I mean, there was the NBA always told us you have to protect your trademark.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I see why people would be angry that we shut them down, but at coming back, if they would have gotten big, they would have had to change anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's no Chicago Bulls podcast
that's
out
just
there.
A random
that's,
a, fan,
that's some
yeah.
random fan. Like, you're going to get shut down. So, everybody kind of gave me a lot of flack on social for doing stuff like that. But it was something that you have to do to protect the brand.
Yep. Okay, so I'm just going to do one more, and then we'll move on. What comes to mind when you think of Hayward? From not necessarily from your fan seat, like not that he's left, like from working with him. What comes to mind?
Well, Hayward was never really too helpful for our cause. I mean, really a lot of players weren't. We didn't get a lot of, part of that was the access and stuff, but he was especially didn't really give us too much to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a couple of memories, like I just remember being in Orlando Summer League and getting a ride to like a practice or ride back from practice. And it was him and Derek Favors. And they were talking about how that was right after we'd gotten rid of Millsap and Jefferson. And they're like, "Do you realize that we're the oldest, like the longest tenured Jazzman now?" And they were like laughing about that. So that was just like little memories like that are pretty funny to think about, but not that many. I mean, his shot against the Cavs, people forget how awesome
amazing.
That game was. And how good he was, how he developed and everything. And I don't get annoyed by the way he left. Like, he was a free agent. That doesn't bother me at all. Like, I think it's funny that it's like, once a Jazz fan, always, or once a Jazz man, always a Jazz man. Except if your name is Hayward, Cantor, Rajah Bell, Derek Fisher.
Right.
So many other guys.
Yeah. I feel like Boozer gets lumped in there sometimes.
Boozer. Well, oh, that's some... Okay, two other things that just came to mind really quick. We couldn't mention Boozer or Williams on any social or site or anything for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Or more, 4 years.
Yeah.
Because of, you know... And that was... There was a lot of times when we're trying to find content.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a memo highlight, but it's mainly focused on D. Will or Boozer, and you can't post it.
That was really tricky. And, you know, like... We would always push back. Like, at least I want to just like to voice my opinion. And that I mentioned that probably didn't go over that well with, you know, management or whatever. But like, when you think about Darren, he's probably at this point of his career or of the Jazz history, the third or fourth or whatever, top guy, Jazz guy ever. And Boozer, I think, you know, arguably top 10 Jazz guy ever. And when you kind of ignore the stars of like that certain era, it was really difficult to not. And I would, I would push back, and we would kind of just be told, you know.
And I think everything's improved, not just those relationships specifically, sure. but in general, they've realized, yeah. you know, like, got to take the high road
yeah.
on that stuff. But we were of mind it should have been done a lot sooner.
Yeah. Bill and I can talk about, like, the stuff we've been talking about forever. But I gotta try to rein it in. We can't have a 5-hour long podcast. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, the current team, what you think. Obviously, we're in a little slump right now. And also, along the same lines of, you were the guy reading the comments or reading the mentions. And, like, you know, when the Jazz lose a few games, like, fans turn quick and they want to voice negative opinion. So that's kind of a two-parter, like, the current team and just kind of like what it's like during, like, a losing streak.
So current team, as we're recording this, they've had that 1-4 road trip, a little bit down on the times, but I'm not worried because, you know, you're not necessarily expected to win in Milwaukee and Philadelphia, and mm-hmm. you lose another 1 or 2. But after this, I think the schedule lightens up a lot, mm-hmm. and they can go on a 12-6 run or better. And like, Quinn is a really good coach. Seeing him up close, is you realize, like, that guy's a genius, mm-hmm. and I'm not worried about it. They'll get back. Mm-hmm. I think they end up as the 5 seed for what, the 4th straight year,
yeah.
and have a tough first round mm-hmm. Matchup. But I'm not really concerned at this point. I think Conley will come along, and I hope Rudy, you know, gets his. The offense he had last year was awesome, where he broke the dunk record.
Yeah.
Doesn't really get the national attention it should. People don't realize that he's a pretty good offensive player
mm-hmm.
In certain situations. And I hope they get back to their defense has slipped a little bit here, but I think they'll get that back too.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're, I think, 8-1 at home right now. And as long as they keep taking care of business at home,
the schedule will even out.
And then start riding the ship on the road, it'll be yeah. good.
I feel like we miss favors. Like, when you talk about defense, and obviously the trade-off was Bogdanovich, who's amazing.
Right,
like, that dude is amazing. But we had to let go of favors.
Right.
And that was kind of like that secondary defensive anchor that I don't think fans, it's not in the forefront of our minds of, like, why isn't our defense the same? Or the team kind of feels a little different. And I think a big part of that is that favors isn't there. When Rudy's out, Fave was always there. So I think that's an adjustment too. Like, so many of these guys or the entire team is still adjusting to different ways of playing.
Right. Yeah. Favors leaving definitely hurts, but they'll figure out some
yeah.
defensive schemes with these guys and
yeah.
make it work.
Bill always had this phrase that I still remind him, is that he would say, "Don't feed the trolls." And what that means is, so the Jazz, or really, if you go on social media in anywhere and you search any kind of topic, there's always just like that one guy or guys who wants to just take it down a negative path. Always. You know, Quinn Snyder could donate, you know, 20 suits or whatever.
And they're like, why not 21?
Yeah. And so there's always that one person. And there was always that in my, naturally, you want to like respond or kind of put that troll in their place. But Bill would always say, don't feed the trolls, because really that pops up more trolls. And especially don't reply from the Jazz account, but don't reply from your own account, because for a number of reasons. But anyway, so along the lines of like reading those comments, like it can take a toll, but.
Yeah, I think you just have to take the high road as the best road. This is the approach we always wanted to take. But thinking back on that a little bit, the Facebook comments, the private Facebook messages were so horrible at times. So horrible to read. I took some screenshots of the worst ones, I think. I don't even know where they are, but just stuff you couldn't even dream up.
Yeah.
If you'll recall, we didn't talk about this at all, but that first year or two, especially all the Jimmer stuff we had to put up with our way almost every...
There wasn't
especially
a day.
When we were a bad team, and every, there would be hundreds of comments about sign Jimmer.
There wasn't Jimmer. A day. So Jimmer was the 2011 draft. I left in 2017. I don't think there was a single day during the season
for like 3 years
where there wasn't someone tweeting at the Jazz to sign Jimmer every day. It could be August and someone would be like, "Hey, we got to sign Jimmer. And I understand from like a a fan, BYU fan's point of view, but like, dang, they're relentless, and they probably are still getting them, I would expect. When you think back at your tenure, like, you started so many things, or at least forwarded so many things as far as pushing them forward, like, what are you most proud of? What do you always remember?
A lot of it's the small moments. I was trying to think about the best memories and stuff, but a lot of it was being on the road for stuff like all-star games, drafts, summer leagues. I got to go with the team to Hawaii for preseason, but it was little things like, you know, I was in the room when they were signing Neto to his contract, like his official contract, because he had signed, they had drafted him, but then I think he still played overseas or something for a year or two. And then they were signing him to his official contract, like before a preseason game, or maybe it was the scrimmage. And in this back room, and it's me, Dennis Lindsay, Justin Zanuck, and Jonathan Reinhardt from PR. Excuse me. And he's like, oh, actually, my name's Haul.
That's right.
Nobody knew his name was Haul. And he'd been with the team for like 2 years officially, or like on paper.
Yeah.
But, and to this day, even like Quinn still calls him Raul, I think. Yeah. It's so funny. So it's like, it's those little moments. Roscoe, remember Roscoe? Yeah. Like hearing Rodney Hood say his nickname's Roscoe.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, we just found that funny. There's like, it's little things like that. That vine loop with Trey Burke, or it was wishing Derek Favors a happy birthday with Trey Burke. And like, happy birthday, Fave. Happy birthday, Fave. Happy birthday, Fave. We've mentioned JP Gibson, Let Jeremy Dunk, our John Stockton stuff. We had John Stockton come in to promote his book, and you got to interview him, and I did a Twitter takeover with him. And I mean,
kind of the peak.
Yeah. So I was typing for him during the Twitter takeover, and somebody asked the questions like, what's it like playing in the NBA? And, or something along those lines. He's like, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. He's like, oh, wait, don't tweet that. So, you know, getting to sit down with him and do that. I had Carl Malone yell at me.
That's
right. You remember that?
There's a video where he had been given permission to be in like the ZBBC to film, because Malone was there working with the bigs. And I wasn't there, but you were like kind of in the corner and zoomed in.
I got, Dennis Lindsay was like, hey, you can go over there and get some video.
And
and I walk over there, and Carl, we have it on video. He's like, who you with? Who you with?
Because he like stops like working with the bigs, and then he like looks directly at Bill, like pivots, and goes, who you with?
And my camera just goes down. You lose the rest of the shot because I was so, so scared.
And Bill's kind of like, you can still hear the audio. He's like, Dennis said this was okay. Didn't Carl say like, well, Dennis isn't down here.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Dennis isn't running this or something.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Quinn scared me once when we were in Hawaii. I got to go into the practice, and we had like posted something. He's like, you're not going to make me look bad, are you? Or something. But he said it like, Quinn's an intimidating guy.
It was
pretty, like, more little moments. Oh, on that same trip in Hawaii, Favors swore on the, do you remember that? So I had him mic'd up, and he's walking like 100 feet ahead of me, and he's testing the mic, and he's like, F you, Bill, F you.
I had forgotten about
that. I got to find that clip, too.
Because he, like, brought the mic up. Like, he brought it up to his face.
Yeah.
To, like, test it out. Because you were, like, walking, like, 100 feet behind him or something. Yeah.
Let's see what else.
What about me and Derek discovering you in the hotel room in New York?
Yeah. We probably shouldn't mention that one.
Okay. Yeah. We'll just leave that to the mystery of what we're talking about.
I was really tired and passed out in my room and had no cell phone service, and they thought I died.
Yeah. Because we're like, hey, let's meet back up in the lobby at 6. And, yeah. We thought Bill had died in his room.
Many memes came of that. Kobe right during his retirement.
That's
thing.
Right.
I was like 5 feet from him.
Didn't you have that 360?
I had the 360 cam thing, and I was like 5 feet from him while he was watching that video.
That's cool.
It was a cool video, but you couldn't hear any of it on the court.
Yeah.
So that was a bummer that I don't think he really knew how cool it was.
Yeah. It was great. And we probably need to do part two and part three eventually.
There's so many memories. Jeremy Evans was, we didn't mention him really, but he was one of the coolest guys, I think, maybe that's part of being a second round pick, end of the bench guy.
Cool.
But I remember one time he stopped, I was at a gas station, and he started honking from, he was probably like 100, 150 feet away from me. I couldn't tell who was in the car. He's just honking, 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 waving me over. And I ran over there, and it was Jeremy Evans. He was like, hey, how's it going? How's it going, man?
Yeah, I love
having
Jeremy.
A good summer, because it was end of summer. He was just coming back for this season, I think.
He's the best.
So those are the little stories that really stick.
Yeah. It was definitely lots of fun. I mean, we had a lot of good times.
Plus, remember, we had the bees responsibilities for those first three or four years, too. Oh, man. We had to post all the bees recaps.
Those bees. The bees.
We were stretched thin with
we did all the bee stuff
our,
too.
Our workload there. Well,
yeah, I kind of forget about that. I've blocked it. Okay, before we stop, we have to do the pop culture stuff. I have to. It's my calling card. We can do it real quick. What are you currently watching on TV show wise? And part two is, do you have a favorite all time show?
Currently, my favorite shows I'm watching a lot are shows like Succession, Billions.
Anything with Bill in the name you have to watch.
Yeah. That Paul Rudd show that just
came out. Oh, yeah. Living With Myself?
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
I like that. Yeah. Euphoria. Just like basically any HBO show is really good. Did you see Euphoria?
I didn't. Is that the Zendaya?
Yeah. It's pretty dark and heavy, but it's really well done. There's a show called Occupied on Netflix it's a Norwegian show.
Okay.
For somebody if you're ever looking for something kind of obscure, it's like weirdly done, but I really liked it.
Okay.
Just saw it's got two seasons, but it's kind of weird.
What's it about?
It's Norway gets hit by a hurricane.
Okay.
And I think they basically end up with all the power over Europe for energy. Basically, they own all of the, it's not oil, it's some other post whatever comes after oil in this futuristic, it doesn't feel like the future, but
okay,
anyway, they get occupied by Russia because of the need for energy, and it's just kind of weird acting and stuff, but
is it like Norwegian,
but it's in English, and yeah, it's Norwegian made. Just started watching The Morning Show on the Apple.
Oh, is that Plus. Good?
It's kind of started out kind of like, is this gonna work? But it's getting better and better.
I've been interested in checking that out.
Yeah. I mentioned anything on HBO, really, like all the comedies on there, Silicon Valley, Ballers.
Veep.
I haven't watched Veep yet.
Oh man. And Curb's coming back.
Yeah, I know. Curb, definitely Crashing. Barry. Have you seen Barry?
I saw yep. That's another Jared Conger. He told me about that. Yeah.
There's Amazon Prime has a lot of good shows.
Did you watch Jack Ryan is kind of
the big one. That. That's good. But there's one called Catastrophe that's a comedy on there that's good. Fleabag. Marvelous Ms. Maisel.
Have you seen The Americans?
I haven't. That's on the list.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good one.
But then a couple of miniseries. Have you seen The Night Manager?
No.
I think it's on Amazon Prime. It's Hugh Laurie and
I haven't seen
Tom something. The guy, he dated Taylor Swift. That guy.
Oh, he's Loki from The Avengers.
Yeah. So
Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, something like that. It's like a six-parter.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Really good. So everybody should go watch
that. When you said miniseries, did you watch Chernobyl?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was, I mean, it's so, you want to see the historical, I didn't know, I mean, probably most people didn't know the details, but it's such an amazingly crazy, sad story.
Right.
And but
I
so well
feel
done.
They did it pretty good. There's another one called Escape at Dannemora on Showtime.
Okay.
That's pretty good. I think it's produced by Ben Stiller.
Okay.
But it's about two inmates who escape at Dannemora prison in New York. It's like a six or eight parter. Pretty good.
Gotcha.
And currently watching The Spy with Sacha Baron Cohen.
The Spy.
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
I think it's like a six parter.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I just listed a lot of TV shows.
No, yeah.
But
what's your
there's
all-time
so much
favorite?
Good out there. That's so tough to
give
say.
Give me one comedy and one drama.
Well, comedy, it's got to be Seinfeld playing to the crowd here.
I was hoping for that.
Drama. Oh.
I know some people go Breaking Bad. Some people go Sopranos.
I haven't seen Sopranos.
Okay.
I actually watched the first half the first episode this week.
Oh, wow.
I'm getting into it. So I'm going to start watching that.
Well, The Sopranos really started. It changed.
Right, yeah.
Like TV and made it like what it is now, I think.
Yeah. It's so tough to say all time drama. Mad Men was really good, obviously. Yeah.
ER.
Yeah, West Wing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more that come to mind after we finish this.
I don't
know,
were you a Game of Thrones guy?
Not as much. I mean, I liked it, but I wasn't into it
as
much as everybody else.
For me, I guess Breaking Bad. I just loved Breaking Bad, mostly because of the story.
I mean, I love Breaking Bad, too.
And yeah, did you watch El Camino?
Yeah, I did. And then Better Call Saul, I saw the first couple seasons, and I need to catch back up on
it's been like a slow burn, Better Call Saul, but like as it goes, it's like it's really getting to a point where it's almost like a Breaking Bad light, like where it gets to, because so many of the characters, like Mike is in it, right? So like so many of the characters from like Breaking Bad are in it in a way. So it's really good.
I really like this like Homeland type dramas. Yeah.
Homeland was one that you got me watching. Like Jack Ryan, but Homeland is like so much more like
But intense. I like those Jack Ryan ones. Yeah. I think it's kind of Homeland light. It's not as good and as great as storylines and everything, but especially those first couple seasons of Homeland were great.
Anything with Paul Giamatti is your he's your boy.
No, I really like Billions. I've gotten into that.
John Adams and Sideways was your
your
movie. So how's your cousin doing?
My cousin.
Yeah.
Which cousin?
Well, I was thinking of Guacamo.
I see where you're going.
Yeah, Guacamole, Bill's cousin. I have one of your cousins I really like is you've got Carefully, Quickly,
Ugly.
Ugly. Yeah, your dad.
Specific.
Your dad is Fatherly. I could not have that in the podcast, especially because I know there's probably going to be like three or four people listening that we used to work with, and they're like, where are the Lee jokes? Where are the Lee jokes? So we used to have a lot of fun at Bill's expense, but I think you were the one who started the Lee jokes with Guacamo.
Maybe, but then I think old marketing compadre Kevin Dalton brought one up that kind of made it a thing. I can't remember what it was. It was my uncle something.
It was,
and then it kind of stuck after
every
that.
Every single day we would just, because I mean every word basically you can end in Lee. So we would be like, hey Bill, how's your cousin, you know, Partial or whatever, you know. Like
so dumb,
and it was so dumb, but it was just I can't get enough, and that's probably just the dad in me. But
to this day, I get text messages whenever I'm on a text chain with you guys. Yeah. There's some Lee joke or two.
Maybe the best, because then we started making Photoshops, and Alex Bryden, who we used to work with, he made the Photoshop of gently.
Oh yeah.
So it was Bill as an old time gent, but it was Gent Lee. So I'll have to dig that up and maybe post that somewhere.
That was one of the better ones.
That's a good one. Yeah, William. Thanks for taking the time. Like I said, we could do this. Maybe we need to do it again. Just a lot of really fun stories. I'm happy that I got to, you know, work with you, and we had, you know, a good thing going for a while. I think I'm proud of what we did, and I see, because I really am. I see what things are now, and I think like we laid the groundwork. Just because we, you know, when you get told 10 times no, eventually it's going to be a yes. And we took the no's for the team, right? Like we were the guy, first guy through the door so that other people could get through, so to speak. And it was just a fun ride. There was a lot of memories, and all these things we're talking about, I think just kind of like came to our mind now. And in 5 minutes, some other random story is going to come to our mind. Like that's, we had a good vibe and a good team in our marketing team. And it was just, it was a, even though the team, the Jazz team, wasn't what it is now, we had a good time doing what we did. But it was good. I mean, it's also like you said, like you get burned out, and it was, you eventually move on.
Yeah. I mean, I think in that kind of role, also, I was getting on the older side for what, you know, the social content, all the contributors in the league are, you know,
there's
25, 30 range.
It's a young man's game.
And it really like keeping up on all the trends and stuff that are skewing younger and younger, I felt it probably needed to turn over at some point also.
Mm-hmm. To the cool uncle.
Yeah.
For I'm going to keep that. I'm going to tell Conger that I'm the cool uncle of Jazz Digital.
But definitely it was a fight to get a lot of that stuff through. But now, I mean, now you're like, why wouldn't you have a social person on the road from time to time. Yeah. And we had to fight for every, that was what, was hard, was just creating all the strategy to get all that stuff out there and then finding ways to get it through, which didn't always happen.
Yeah. Thanks again to Bill. You definitely, he's promised he's going to start tweeting more, at Billy Lea, LEA. Thanks to everybody for listening to Jazzed. I think this will be our 9th episode. It's fun to chat and to go over memories like this. Like, not everyone's going to have the same kind of relationship I have with Bill as far as guests on this podcast, but that's what makes this one, you know, unique and fun to do. Hopefully, you know, everybody listening has found it fun. But any last words before we end?
Not much. Just keep up the good work. Yeah. Pumping out the content.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks to everyone for listening, and go Jazz.
Go Jazz.